Are you using a protein powder in your daily nutrition or as part of your workout preparation or recovery? What is in your protein powder? What is the source? And what about all of those other ingredients? And is it serving you? If any of this is piquing your interest, stay tuned here for episode number 78. Welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. The show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my co-host Bob Sibahar. We are both registered dietitians and board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We're here to help provide translations of nutrition and sports science to real life, give you interviews with a variety of experts and athletes where you enhance your knowledge and bring a fun nutrition convo to you each week. So in this episode, Protein Powder Part 1. We hope you will enjoy this episode, and we'd love to connect with you over on Instagram, ISN Podcast. Connect with us there. Leave us a DM if you have a question or a topic you'd like for us to pursue in a future episode. And also, it'd be fun to connect with you on our respective business accounts as well. So if you're over on Instagram, you can connect with Bob over at Energy Performance, ENRG Performance, or myself, Dina, at Nutrition Mechanic. Thank you so much, listeners, for being here, and let's get to episode number 78. Hello, Bob. It's time to talk about another product that we know a lot of our listeners are using. We could call it a food product. We could call it a supplement. We can call it a mysterious powder.
It is kind of mysterious, isn't it?
It is. Protein powders is the topic du jour. Bob, have you had any protein powder today?
Near and dear to my heart and daily nutrition. Now, here's the thing. Have I had some today? Yes, I have actually. I was just thinking about what did I have for breakfast this morning? Yeah. So I make a really mean bowl of oats, and I've got so much stuff I add in there. But as we know, there's not a lot of protein, at least not the protein quantity I need in a bowl of oats, even though I dress it quite well with other things. So yes, I did hit some unflavored whey protein isolate powder today in my morning bowl of oat concoction.
Awesome. I think the listeners we all need to get on the same page here talking about protein powders, because there's a lot of confusion out there, the different types, what's best when you're shopping around. Are they a highly processed food and we shouldn't even have protein powders? So we wanted to bring some essentials here to the table in terms of, you know, here, pun intended, the scoop behind protein powder. And then also break down animal versus plant. But Bob, we're probably going to have to split this into a couple episodes because there's a lot of content here to go over and a lot of good stuff we want to share with our listeners.
Yeah. So listeners, this is part one in our protein powder series. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about the background, kind of the ins and outs, and then we're going to end by focusing on the animal-based protein powders. And then part two, we're going to delve into plant-based protein powders. So just kind of keep an eye for that split series here.
Awesome, Bob. I feel like we have to start with a pretty basic thing. Like, what is a protein powder? I mean, do you feel like everyone knows what a protein powder is?
I don't actually. Like, even though it says in the name protein powder, I have to qualify it. When I work with athletes, when they say, oh, I had a protein shake or a protein smoothie or a protein drink or whatever, I always have to qualify a couple things in my mind first, Dina. The first thing I qualify is, does it have carbohydrates, right? Because if you think, and maybe people don't think like I do, but if I hear protein powder, I'm assuming it's protein only. Right. So, and that is my assumption because, you know, we can make wonderful smoothies with protein powders and add in some great fruits and vegetables for the carbohydrates. But there are some quote unquote air quotes protein powder that actually have a lot of carbohydrates too. So I do think it's quite confusing because, listen, when you look on these shelves or online or wherever, a protein powder is not just a protein powder. We really need to look at these things carefully. It's very similar to energy bars or snack bars for that matter.
It's such a great point to start with, Bob. I have to reinforce it because, I mean, all right, we need, you know, the companies out there have to do their marketing and sell their products. And that marketing can be tricky for the consumer because it'll say in big bold letters and snazzy fonts like protein powder. And then you know, get your detective hat on, turn around the fancy package and look, and exactly what you just said, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in there besides protein. And then sadly, sometimes those protein powders don't even have that much protein. So there's a lot of learning and empowerment here that we want all our listeners to have.
Yeah. And it depends on how you use them, right? Of course. But we know, I mean, protein powders are, I mean, as we're talking about from animal sources, I mean, it's made from milk, right? I mean, we're looking at predominantly whey right now and casein protein, but you know, are protein powders a processed food? I would probably have to go out and say, well, yeah, there is processing because they have to take it from a milk, you know, constituent into a powder form. And through that process, at least with whey protein, through that process, you can actually reduce the lactose content. And that's one thing I did want to bring up, Dee, for our lactose intolerant or allergen athletes out there, that I do want to just hit on that, not right now, but somewhere through this conversation, the type, if you're going to choose a whey, because here's the thing, if you're lactose intolerant, it is still possible to have whey protein, depending on your degree of intolerance or degree of allergy. If it's an allergy, I wouldn't have it. But if you're just intolerant, you can still have whey protein, but it has to be a certain one.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. But I love what you just brought up. The question like, well, geez, protein powders are processed. I don't do processed foods. Mm-hmm. I think being clear, I mean, technically, yes, I agree. It is a processed food, but it's quite different than the soy cheese, for example, the Frankenfood type thing that's highly ultra processed. So with protein powders, the source is basically dried or evaporated, right? And to remove whatever other compounds, remove water and some of these other things. And then some filtering and depending on the company, some other processing steps. But I mean, it's kind of like oats, right? It is harvested from the ground and then quote unquote processed into flakes or those edible pieces and bits. But it doesn't mean it's the same as something that's highly processed or ultra processed. So just some nuances there and maybe just words being shifted around to say, don't worry too much about protein powders in terms of the processing. But of course, we'll talk about some of the other aspects we want to keep our eyes on.
That you do want to worry about. And that's not one of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. Well, what about like, how do we know if we need them or why would we use a protein powder?
That's a good question. You know, if we go back to just my example, my breakfast this morning. So here's what I put in there. I put oats. I put unflavored whey protein isolate powder. I put cinnamon, walnuts, banana. What else did I put in there? 2, 3. I'm trying to add up all my ingredients, chia seeds. And then I did some unsweetened almond milk. So if you're thinking about that, taking the protein powder out of it, not a lot of protein in there, right? And aside, I don't know, maybe putting some tofu in there or using cow's milk or something. And that still wouldn't push me over what I need for my morning protein.
Okay. You kind of just flipped me out because I never thought of mixing tofu and oats.
Oat foo. That would work.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, and I just want to, just for the record, I've never tried it, but it definitely is something that I would try.
Okay.
I mean, you think about it, Dee, like if you just like mash up some tofu and put it in there and then you heat it up, like it could probably work. It's going to have a little bit of a weird texture, but oatmeal already has a weird texture.
Okay. Well, you keep us posted on your oat foo.
Anywho, it sounds like we're in a Disney movie or something. But no, here's the thing. Like the reason I use it for that particular breakfast is because I know I need a certain amount or I want a certain amount of protein, and I don't, aside from, you know, eating eggs, and that's a completely different breakfast. That's why I use protein powder in that specific meal.
So complementing a meal or perhaps being part of a snack as well.
Absolutely.
And then we have our other athlete context here, or active lifestyle, maybe just around workouts, different kinds of training sessions, protein powders coming in pretty handy as a way to get the needed amino acids or just enhance our overall daily protein intake.
Well, I think that's a good point, Dee, because you and I focus so heavily on protein and balancing and optimizing control and blood sugar and everything. And yeah. I think you and I still find a lot of athletes consume under what they should be eating for protein. And I do think that's where possibly a protein powder, if we've exhausted the options of protein-rich foods or those aren't available or whatever, I think, you know, literally mixing up some protein powder in your choice of fluid could be a great afternoon snack. And if you need extra carbohydrates, throw some fruit in there with it or some nuts or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such an easy way to do it. But I want to say this. I want to be on record saying, I don't want you to discount the power of food, because food will have so many more micronutrients and other nutrients in it to support our body and our brain. I view a protein powder as a snack as a great option, but more as a lower priority option. But also to make, like, you know, if someone presents and says, hey, I'm either going to skip my snack and destroy my blood sugar and possibly binge later, or I'm going to have some fluid, milk, water, whatever, with some protein powder, I'm going to choose the latter 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, have your protein powder, because it is for a specific reason.
Agreed. Not meant to be replacing all of our other whole food sources or intact protein sources in our daily plan.
Yep.
Okay. Well, Bob, anything else behind reasons to use protein or use cases before we move on?
I'm kind of going at, like, with my own, perspective and how I use it, like, and even not with only with myself, but with other athletes. And I know we'll talk about this later when we talk about animal protein powders, but there are certain ones you can use before bed also. And that might also be very advantageous for preserving lean muscle mass. And for some of our athletes who kind of, that's one of their goals within the scope of health and or performance. So I know we'll talk about those differences. Perfect. But I do want to make sure that conversation, and you can do this through food also. There are foods right. with this specific protein, but I do find that protein powder sometimes comes in really handy. Now, it would be wrong for me not to say this. The cost of protein powders has risen significantly in the past few years, just like creatine. I think the pandemic did something crazy to our supply chain. And I'm going to say this because you can look at, like, because I've done this pricing, and I don't know about you, Dee, but, like, I've got so many of my college athletes asking me about protein powder that I've had to research the different costs, like per ounce, per gram of protein for all these different, like, NSF certified for sport brands. And some of them out there are really, really expensive. I'm not going to, like, I would go to the point saying, I don't think I would spend my money on that if I'm using protein powder daily. Now, if it's once every few days, totally fine. Like, spend a little bit more money on the high quality. And I'm not saying go low quality, but I'm just saying, based on how often you use protein powder, you might want to shop around a little bit to find the best and most economical.
Yes, cost per serving.
Yes.
But then that tricky line between, like, you get what you pay for sometimes,
totally.
But yet, yeah, frequency of use, what your goals are. Can we use whole food instead that might be more affordable?
Well, and even looking in bulk, like, you know, I had this conversation again back to my college athletes, and, you know, a lot of these protein powders are sold in 1 or 2 pound canisters or bags, which is totally fine. But remember, sometimes, not all the time, if you buy in bulk, like a 5 or 10 pound bag, and that might seem so intimidating, like, there's no way I'm going through this. But remember, if you're going to save, like, sometimes you could pay half the price if you get a little bit more. And trust me, you will use that eventually, right? The date of expiration is very, very lenient on most protein powders. So just keep that in mind and looking for bulk.
I mean, it was a reason I could get a little extra shelf space installed in my kitchen area because I needed for the 10-pound container.
Exactly.
So some house improvements just because I needed room for the tub of protein. But
I love that.
Anyways, Bob, now I'm thinking a little bit more here on quality of protein powder, because even if we're going to narrow this down to talking more about animal protein, there's some rules that apply to all the protein powders out there, that being like, what the heck is in it besides the protein source?
Yeah.
Do you want to start with this thought here, Bob?
Yeah. I mean, when it really comes down to it, I mean, let's just be as, let me just use this word, as naked as we can, right? As transparent as we can. You just need protein powder. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes there's some lecithin, like some sunflower lecithin to kind of, you know, prevent it from sticking together. Totally get that. But you don't need, unless you're going to do a flavored protein powder, right? And we'll talk about that in a second. But that's probably the basic. Like I try to actually, I have usually one or two different protein powders floating around our house. And one is always an unflavored, because I want that option of just having literally protein powder. So I think that's number one. Number two is the proprietary blends. If you ever see proprietary blend, I mean, honestly, I would just stay away from it, because you don't know how much of what is actually in there. And that's kind of scary, right? I mean, I wouldn't want to eat something or consume something that I don't know what it actually is, right? Or that's how much of something is going in my body.
That's right. You don't know how much of each, like if there's more than one protein source, you don't know how much of each source is in there. And then, yeah, that their secret formula. I mean, it's just a little suspect. I shouldn't say suspect. It's just, but like, why can't you just share the breakdown?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to correct you, Dina. It is suspect. It really is. Like if I'm making a protein, if it's Bob and Dina's protein powder, why would we do anything proprietary? Like, wouldn't we want consumers to know exactly what's in it? I mean, I want to know exactly what I put in my body. So I don't know. I would go out there on a limb and
it's
say,
true,
we should demand that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking the word proprietary then confers this notion like it's exclusive. It is made in the special secret lab.
Yeah.
And therefore, we also can charge you zillions more per serving.
Right.
So anyways, that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
When we're looking at those formulations.
Absolutely. What do you think about artificial ingredients? Because once you start reading the ingredient, and now I'm getting away from just the unflavored protein powders, but so now we're into the flavored, and there's so many flavors out there. I mean, it's crazy. You know, you've got like, you know, Fruity Pebbles protein powder right now, but
I know.
What do you think about all these ingredients and artificial ingredients? And what, I mean, what do you teach?
I like to, okay, here's where I start, is like, what are your flavor preferences? If we're going to use a protein powder, we've gotten to that point. What are your flavor needs for your palate? And can we do that with some other addition? Like, is it cocoa powder or, you know, some vanilla extract or something like that if we're doing some basics? But in the end, if we're looking at a product to be everything with some flavor added, Bob, I do get a little more careful when we see things like artificial sweeteners or things that just say on the label, like artificial flavors added, and they're not really even delineating for us what those are. I mean, I know the research is a little bit mixed on impact of artificial sweeteners and things like sugar alcohols on gut health and maybe even some effects on brain and so forth. But I think in general, I hate to use this word cleaner, but let's say the more pure, the better in my sequence of decision-making.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, it's a tough line, I know, for manufacturers, because they're, you know, they're trying to get really product placement. They're trying to really, I mean, it's such a competitive market as everything is, right? But so I get what they're trying to do, but I don't get why they're doing some of the things they do, right? So, you know, some of them add stevia or monk fruit, and I get that. I totally get that. And some of them are putting some sugar alcohols, and there are some worse sugar alcohols for your gut and GI system than others. The one thing that I really don't understand is, like you were saying, like the artificial stuff, yeah. like the artificial colorings, the preservatives, whatever it is. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say this too. I'm not a big fan of sucralose D. I don't like it. I don't like the taste, number one, but I've read some research on it promoting very big issues in the microbiome, so gut health. And I don't like that, right? And this is, doesn't even come down to protein powder. I was actually evaluating a sports drink for a college athlete the other day. And she's like, hey, what do you think of this? And I'm not going to say the brand. I'm just not going to say it. But I was reading the ingredients. I'm like, oh, okay, check, check. Sucralose. Why? And my only thought was, why are you putting sucralose in a sport drink? It already has cane sugar or whatever, glucose, fructose. Like, why are you adding sucralose? Yeah. What is the purpose, right? I get it with a protein powder. Because if you're going to do like a chocolate or vanilla, it should have a little sweetness, right? Mm-hmm. Or I guess you can argue that, but again, why not just use stevia or monk fruit? I mean, it's a little better, right? Yeah. So I'm with you there. I mean, the less artificial stuff, the better. And, you know, I've even seen some companies going off and in their marketing, they specifically highlight no artificial ingredients, right? Which is great. It's a first step for sure.
Well, speaking of sweeteners and like that taste combination, what is your take then on the companies that put in the added sugar, whether that's cane sugar or some other whole sugar source?
My take on this is this is protein powder. You don't need too many added sugars, right? So usually they put them in for flavor, right? And I totally get that. If they're going to do like cane sugar, but my rule of thumb is if you can stay under about 3 grams of carbohydrate or added sugars per serving and, you know, 20 to 30 grams of protein, that's usually what I try to use because I get what they're trying to do in terms of the flavor, but I just don't see the purpose of adding more because now in my mind, it's not really functioning as a protein powder. It's kind of functioning as that post-workout, get your carbs and protein powder. And that's a whole different product.
Yeah, that's right. Bob, the recovery shakes or powders, right? That ratio and formulation's different to serve a different purpose. Totally. And that almost could be episode number 3 or 4.
And if you're using protein powder as a post-workout supplement, okay, if you're trying to get protein in, but if you're really trying to get carbohydrates too, I mean, just use a solid protein powder and eat a banana or something. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, do you really need to pay that much money for these really, very expensive powders that have carbs and protein when you can just literally get a banana for 25 cents at the store, whatever, I mean, right?
Good point. Speaking of that other, the nutrient content of the whole food source, we're going to get a lot more from the banana than just a teaspoon of table sugar or a tablespoon of table sugar that's added.
Yes. Yes.
So
what about the protein per serving? Cause that is kind of all over the place, isn't it? Depending on the product and the company.
That's true, Bob. And so whoever we're working with and, you know, whoever you are out there listening, that is not standardized. Essentially, I mean, if you're looking at the same kind of powder, let's say a whey isolate, pretty much the companies will fall in the same range, like, you know, 18 to 25 grams of protein per serving, which could be, you know, whatever their scoop size is. But whether or not that's sufficient amount for you will, again, depend on that use case. Are we using this as part of a meal or part of a post-training protein hit? So that's something else to take note of. And remember that the protein content isn't all the same, even if it is the same source. There might be a little bit of difference there.
Oh my gosh, Dee, can I just go off on a quick tangent? Because you mentioned the scoop, and I have so many athletes who say, because when I ask them, you know, do you use protein powder? Yeah, well, how much do you put in? Oh, I put a scoop. I'm like, but what does that mean? We don't know. Because just like you said, it can range 18, 25, I've seen 15 to 30. I mean, it's all over the place. So if you talk to a sport dietitian listeners, make sure you tell us the grams of protein, because that's what matters. Because most of the time we're looking, I mean, for a snack, I don't know what, 15 to 25 grams of protein, somewhere around there, right? Mm-hmm. For a meal, although I don't know why you would be using this for a meal, but it's higher for a meal or even certain populations, right?
Yes, exactly.
So when do we need maybe more protein, D, or who do we need more protein with?
We could think about our master's age athletes, all of us, you know, over 35, 40, male, female, but also for our peri and postmenopause athletes.
Yes, yes.
So those couple cases, definitely maybe even in the situation of injury or other situations where intake is lower through food, trying to meet those needs through a protein powder could come in handy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
Bob,
that's where I'm sorry. I was just going to say real quick, I think those populations, myself included, I think that's one reason I do utilize protein powders, because sometimes I know as an aging athlete, I'm not willing to eat that much meat or cheese or dairy, whatever it is, because I'm like, oh, it's just so much. And maybe I don't want all the extra whatever that comes with it. Maybe I just need to top off my protein a little bit. What, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think we do need to consider our age, our gender, and where we are, if we are female, on that menstrual journey.
Yes. I was just thinking of something you said earlier. A protein powder should be just protein, basically. But Bob, have you noticed some of the products out there that do have like vitamin? It's like a greens powder and a probiotic, and then they throw in extra fiber sources. It ends up being like a meal replacement powder. But have you seen some of those trends too?
Oh,
it's years?
So popular.
Yeah.
So popular these days. And you know why? You know what it stems from? It stems from us being lazy. It really does. And I get it. Like, I'm not saying I'm not, but it's a pain in the butt sometimes to cook meals or to prepare these things. Like, I get it. And I think that's why a lot of companies are like, you know what? We're going to go after these consumers who don't have a lot of time to prep or cook. They're eating out a lot, and we're just going to dump everything in here. So now, not only from a marketing standpoint, we can maybe sell our product, but maybe we can actually give them more nutrients that they need. But here's the thing, you just hit it, Dee. It's not a protein powder anymore. It's a meal replacement powder.
Yeah.
And if that's why you're using it, fantastic. But remember, it serves a different purpose.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think we're getting our schooling here.
I think so.
We've talked a lot about things we don't want in our protein powders. Are there some things we want to just mention here in brief before we talk about some animal sources, things we do want to look for?
Well, you've heard me say this over and over again. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're a competitive athlete, college, pro, elites, doesn't matter. If you're just a recreational, you and I, Dina, right? Please look for one that has a third party testing organization stamp of approval certification. So the two I really like are NSF certified for sport or Informed Sport certified. Yeah. It doesn't matter, because I get a lot of people like my recreational athletes, like, no, you know, I don't get drug tested. It doesn't matter. Well, yes, it matters, because these organizations are actually testing what is in it, not only if it's legal or not for our competitive athletes, but looking at the quantities of ingredients, making sure there are no arsenic or anything else in there. Like, it's really important. So that's first and foremost for me in looking at any protein powder. Like, I will not use one that does not have one of those certifications.
Agreed, Bob. And then there are a couple other websites too, where you can cross check the quality of the product. So, I mean, just if you're looking at a couple that appeared to be meeting those criteria, some independent parties or independent groups are evaluating. In addition, just what the quality and purity is, like Consumer Lab or Labdoor, those are some other reference sites that can be used. Just check in the boxes to make sure we're getting what we're paying for.
Exactly. We should include those in the show notes for sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think another thing is looking, and it doesn't apply too much for the animal proteins, but definitely for the plant, which we'll talk about in episode two here, or part two, is looking at the amino acid breakdown, right? It's very important to know, and most animal proteins, especially when we talk about whey, has a very good combination and subset of amino acids, right? Because it's from an animal product, but amino acid breakdown is very, very important. And I think we unpackage that a little bit more when we talk about plant blends.
Sounds good, Bob.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You mentioned milk earlier. So when we're talking about sources of protein powder in here towards the end of this episode, wanting to focus on animal derived sources, milk protein is a primary source. Do you want to break it down a little bit for us, Bob?
Yeah, it's definitely probably when you think protein powder, I think almost everybody, unless you're a vegan and you have been for quite a while, almost everybody is automatically thinking whey protein, right? Because it's the most popular. Like it is literally, I don't know what kind of market share it has, but it has probably the highest market share, right? Because it's familiar, it's been around for a while, it comes from cows, right? So whey protein is one of the constituents of milk, as is casein, which we'll talk about here in a second. But when it comes to milk protein, and there's like milk protein isolates, but when we look at that, we kind of need to define which animal is it coming from, because yeah. I have seen a rise in popularity in goat protein powder. Have you seen this?
I have too. Yes.
Okay. And I haven't tried it, to be honest with you. I do not know what it tastes like, so I cannot speak to that. But all I can say is a lot of individuals, I believe, are navigating a little bit more towards the goat protein. And here's the thing that, because I actually had to look this up because I don't know too much about it, but goat protein powder has less lactose. So for our lactose intolerant or allergic athletes, it also has some prebiotics because it has oligosaccharides in it. So those prebiotics help feed those wonderful probiotics in our tum tum. And it, you know, I think it's what people are saying is it's better for our lactose intolerant athletes, although I'm going to disagree with that in one second, but that's probably the extent of what I know about goat protein powder.
I was just going to add, I think I've seen some sheep protein powder well. And yeah, I think ultimately digestibility for the milk proteins and yeah, the lactose content, it would be the reason to consider one of the non-cow dairies as far as a protein powder.
Well, and I think, so let's unpackage that really quick, right? If we look at that whey protein powder, like whey protein powder isn't just whey protein powder. There's actually three different more popular classifications of it. So there is what is called whey protein concentrate, and that actually has more lactose in it. There's whey protein isolate, which is probably the most popular one that has less lactose. And this is just due to the processing and how they do this. And then there's a whey hydrosylate, which has, I mean, even less lactose than an isolate, right? Because of the ultra processing. So I often find that lactose intolerant athletes can still tolerate a little bit of the isolate. They can definitely tolerate a lot more of the hydrosylate, but the concentrate, here's the thing, you're going to pay less for the concentrate because usually it's a little bit less whey protein also, but it's a little bit tougher when you have lactose intolerance. So what I say is you also, I have athletes doing this all the time. They'll go on Amazon or whatever, and they're like, oh, this one's cheap. I'm like, look at the type of whey protein first, because it's probably a concentrate because it is a lot cheaper because there are less steps in making it.
Good points, Bob. Yeah. So our lactose intolerant, don't discount your whey powder yet, but we definitely have to get to that isolate form. And like you're saying, Bob, depending on severity of allergy or that level of intolerance, these whey isolates can potentially work just fine.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we also need to mention that whey is very, what we call fast acting or fast absorbing, right? Because a lot of athletes will use whey after a workout or before a workout, right? Because it does, it assimilates and metabolizes very quickly as opposed to its cousin, casein, right? And casein is still part of that milk product. So it kind of comes from the dairy, but, or from the cow or the goat for that sense. Although is there goat casein powder?
Ooh, I have not seen that. Searched for that or had a need for that.
So listeners, if you take goat casein powder, can you just email us hello@insidesportsnutrition.com? We just love to just learn about that, right? Because I just that was just off on a tangent. I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard of that before. But anyway, so casein is a slower absorbing milk protein powder, right? A lot of athletes will use that. That's what I referred to earlier, like right before bed, because there has been some studies on casein protein, how would you say, kind of slowing the muscle degradation process during sleep. So it preserves lean mass a little bit better during sleep. And I have a lot of my weight gainers using casein protein, but I also have some athletes using it throughout the day, just because it has a longer curve, if you will, right? So it's not that initial up and down. So I don't know. Have you had good luck with casein protein?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's not something that I've recommended too often, but certainly for those high performing athletes who do have higher energy needs and they struggle with getting in protein in the evening hours, like with afternoon right. workouts and so forth, just doing a little top off with casein in the evening has yep. been beneficial. I think the flavor, you know, that it's a little different texture and flavor than some is. Of the ways. So you have to get a little creative.
And it's more expensive most of the time also.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, what about egg protein powder? Some of our athletes are like, our listeners are like, what?
Egg protein powder? I know that's another one that's out there. I don't think it's used as commonly, but essentially it's the egg white, mm-hmm. Not the whole egg, typically in a powder form. I mean, that I think, again, in my athletes, Bob, it's not as common, but for those who do have a, you know, milk allergy across the board, mm-hmm. egg protein is highly bioavailable. It's a very high quality amino acid profile. So it certainly can be included if we're not getting in enough protein from whole food sources like yeah. whole eggs.
I agree. I mean, and you are missing some of the great nutrients that you find in whole eggs, but I get using egg protein powder for sure. I don't know how it tastes. Have you ever tried it?
It's been a while. I honestly cannot remember if it was eggy.
Right. Cause some of this actually does come down to the taste, unless you're going to put it in a everything smoothie where you're trying to hide the taste. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think part of that discussion also, we kind of factor in beef protein powder because mm-hmm. that is a thing. And again, some of our listeners are like, what?
I know.
Beef protein powder. But again, to your point, like with our listeners who do have these severe milk or dairy allergies, yeah, I mean, there are some opportunities to still use protein powders that are not dairy based, right? So egg protein powder, beef protein powder, for sure can fit throughout.
Yes. Bob, there's another one that's coming onto the scene hot for its sustainability purpose.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
You know, and are you ready?
I mean, I am ready.
Cricket protein
cricket, yes.
powder.
Cricket protein powder.
Have you dabbled in it?
Well, here's a funny story. Years and years and years ago, when I had brick and mortar for Energy Performance, and we had our strength training classes, I had a group of individuals participating in those a couple times a week. And one of the participants was a fellow dietitian, and it wasn't you, right? Let's just say, but one of them was a dietitian, and one day, we were talking about this. This was, I mean, honestly, this is probably 6-7 years ago. And she's like, cricket protein powder, cricket flour. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, no, it's the latest thing. I'm like, and then the next class she comes in, I'm not kidding you, with a bag of crickets. And they weren't alive. They weren't alive, right? Like the actual cricket. They were dried or whatever you call it, right? She's like, no, the protein is amazing. And they make protein powder. That was my introduction to cricket, right? So of course I had to try it. And I tried a couple. I'm like, you know what? They're crunchy. They're not bad. And maybe they need a little seasoning on them. But and then I started researching it a little bit, not a lot, but I totally get the protein or the sustainability aspect of that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, full disclosure, I have not looked at the amino acid content comparatively to because I don't think crickets are animals, they're insects. So where does that fall into the whole? But have you looked at the profile before?
I haven't, Bob. So that'll be a good assignment here. Like, head to head with the same content, like by weight, you know, 100 grams or whatever of whey isolate versus your cricket protein. And how many crickets does it take to get 100 grams or 30 grams?
It's going to take
a
lot of crickets. Yeah.
Oh,
I know. I mean, I know cricket protein powder has more fat for sure. It has more fiber, right? Because those are the things that are stripped, or fat is stripped from the whey protein processing.
That's a lot.
So I know off the top of my head, it is a lot of crickets, right? And they're teeny. They're not like the big old, you know, cricket grasshoppers that we think of. They're really small. So it's not, and if you're going to eat a cricket, like it's not that intimidating. But so you should try one. They're not bad.
I haven't had the whole cricket. I have had a couple of those bars that have cricket powder in it. Yeah. So,
but you probably taste anything.
Baby stepping my way to cricket protein powder. But there's a couple other powders out there, Bob, that are confusing for people. So I'm thinking of collagen and bone broth, or you know, those broth powders that are labeled protein powder.
Well, in collagen, and I wish they wouldn't do that. I mean, I get it. It's not wrong, but I just wish they wouldn't, because collagen, super, super popular these days. And we're definitely not going to poo-poo that by any means, because there are some specific purposes and instances to use collagen. But collagen powder, as I recall, is missing a certain amino acid. And please correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's methionine. If I am correct, I'm not exactly sure, but my point is it's missing a certain amino acid. So you can't really use collagen as a true protein powder because it is missing one of the amino acids. So that's my beef with that. Like, use collagen for what you're trying to use it for: skin, tendons, ligaments, right? If you're trying to do that, but don't use collagen for your protein powder because it's missing an amino acid.
Yes, the quality of that for muscle building or maintenance, the collagen powder doesn't quite make the mark there. So we want to use that for the other purposes that you mentioned. And
well,
I think
what about
similar,
bone broth?
I think similar to the bone broths is, it just, again, per serving, you're not getting the quality or the enough of those essential amino acids for the muscle purpose, like the muscle protein synthesis purpose.
Exactly.
So
I must correct myself, D, because I just looked it up briefly. It is not methionine. It is missing tryptophan.
Tryptophan. Okay.
Tryptophan. So listeners, just stand, you know, forewarned that use collagen for what it's there for, but not as a protein powder specifically.
Okay.
And same broth. I mean, bone broth is fantastic. I mean, it really is, right? I mean, you can cook, I mean, the powder, like you can make a broth out of it. You can do all these great things with it, but maybe not as a air quote protein powder.
Right.
Yeah.
Not providing exactly the same profile.
Exactly.
So cool. I kind of want to hear from our listeners what they're using from, you know, if they're using protein powders, the purpose and what their go-to is, you know. So if you feel like dropping us a note over at hello@insidesportsnutrition.com, any of your protein powder questions and what you're using would be cool to hear.
Absolutely. Especially when it comes to animal, because there aren't as many sources as there are plant sources, which we'll get into in our part two, right? Because those are all over the place. But I feel like animal, there's like a handful of them, right? So listeners, you know, let us know what you're taking, maybe even why. I would be really, like, I always wonder about the why behind things. Mm-hmm. Like I shared with you why I put it in my oats, right? But some mornings, you know, I mean, some days I don't even use a protein powder. It all depends on what I'm doing with my food. Like if I have, you know, one breakfast I rotate through are eggs. So I'm like, well, I don't need any protein powder in my, you know, maybe my snacks are okay. Maybe my lunch is okay in terms of having enough protein. And I don't feel like I need protein powder. And I think just as a last, you know, kind of a last push here is making sure that we're not over dependent on these powders, but we use them how we feel they should be used in our daily lives. Like, how do we need them personally? Just because like your friend uses it after a workout doesn't mean you need to use it. Like, you need to look at why you're using it. What purpose does it serve? Are you aging? Are you peri-postmenopausal? Like all these different things, it shouldn't be used as a band-aid, right? It shouldn't just be like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to miss lunch traditionally miss lunch, and I'm just going to have a protein shake or whatever.
I couldn't agree more, Bob.
Oh, love it.
That's it.
All right. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. And with that, listeners. Oh, wait, Dina.
I had one other thing that I think we might have to do in another episode is this question about amino acid supplements. So like the essential aminos, the branch chains, because those come in powder forms. Aren't they the same thing? So we'll table that, Bob, for another
episode.
So what
you're saying is that this is going to be a three-part series.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that will be part three. So part two coming up will be plant-based protein powders. Part three will be all these other amino acid, branch chain amino acid powders. So we can kind of really get into the thick of what is going on here.
Sounds good. Yeehaw.
All right. Woo. That was a great episode. Listeners, we so appreciate you sticking with us. We know it's a lot of information. We'll put some great notes and things in the show notes. Please head on over to our website, insidesportsnutrition.com. Contact us. Let us know if you have any questions or feedback. And we just appreciate you listening every single week to, you know, our banter sometimes.
Thank you, listeners.
All right. With that, we will leave you and we will see you or hear you on the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode, part one of protein powders. Stay tuned for next week. We've got a part two coming up, looking into plant protein powders, considerations and things to know when shopping around or using a plant-based protein powder. We would love your support in promoting this podcast. Be sure you are following or subscribing over on your pod platform of choice to get the weekly episodes. And also, if you have a minute to leave a rating or review, a 5-star rating would be groovy. And favorable review, it does help us grow and share the content with other listeners like you around the world. You can learn more about our services and our respective businesses. Follow Bob or head over to his website, energyperformance.com, energyperformance.com, to learn more about coaching, testing, and so on. And likewise, myself, Dina, over at nutritionmechanic.com. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.